Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, host of The Big Story, Canada's longest-running daily news podcast. For 6 years now, we've been telling one story a day, every one of them about something that matters to Canadians. This spring, though, we're going deeper. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt, the inside story of Ontario's Greenbelt scandal. From political games to stag and doe parties, endangered species, RCMP investigations, and Las Vegas massages, you will hear the full story straight from the people who broke it. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt. New episodes every Monday starting April 22nd, and you can get them all by following The Big Story wherever you get your podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Hey, I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg, and this is Side Note,
a podcast where every episode we tell stories about and then debate a controversial topic.
And then we research and splice in all the mind-blowing shiznit throughout so you are entertained while simultaneously learning.
Today, we're talking about zoos. We're going to start off with stories of how Greg was a little political animal rights activist when he was younger, writing songs about marine land. I can just picture him singing them. And then I have some terrifying tarantula stories about the time that I was actually living in an elephant nature park. And then we're going to bring in an actual zookeeper to talk to about their job, the amazing cuteness of it, but also some of the controversial points, what people think about zoos. And it'll be great to see the perspective of somebody who actually works in one and sees the different research and questions that come along with that.
Today's Side Notes will be presented by me, Craig, and Rachel.
Hey friends, let's get into it.
Hi!
And action!
I'm back!
Yeah, Mitch is back, so for those who are just listening every single week, you know that Mitch was not here last week.
Like, Rachel truly, when my friends texted and he was like, are you dead? You're not on the podcast. Where you been?
That's so sad to only think that, to know you're missing only through
way.
Your podcast.
Yeah, I obviously don't see him enough. No, that's actually like Alex, who I see like all the time. Hi, Alex.
Did you like it without you?
Yes, it actually made me like love and appreciate the podcast even more because I was like, oh, I'm jealous. I want to be there. They're having so much fun chatting and talking. And then it gave me like a renewed perspective on when you're in something so much, it's hard to appreciate it in the same way. You're just like, oh, yeah, we just come in here and we chat. But when you listen, it was the first time I ever listened to it as a listener.
Wow, that sounds fun. I'm going to take 6 weeks off. Okay.
Have a nice vacation. How was it?
Great. It was great.
Had fun, was it?
I was saying we're both nose pickers, so we both got to pick our nose.
Yeah, that was the one where I was like, why are you talking about this? It's disgusting.
Wow, that was the first thing we said. That means from the get-go, you were being critical. Interesting.
Yeah, I have some notes to go over later, but that's okay. No, I'm joking. How are you? How's life? What's new?
I'm great. Sel, our editor, just informed me that I am wearing a cool skate brand called Alltimers. It's a female skate brand. It's Canadian. I just learned about it. I am what they call a poser. What about you?
Good. It was nice to have a bit of a week off, like, as we know. I don't know if everyone knows. It was just nice for me. I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, there's so much going on and my brain can't handle it all. And it was just, like, nice to have a little step away. But I'm back, and I feel happy about that.
Oh, what did we learn this week?
All right. My what did you learn this week is a little intense.
What?
It's not, like, exactly related to zoos, so I didn't know if, like, you want to go first or second.
Mine's related to zoos.
Okay. All right, I'll go first. But, like, this might, hopefully you can bring the mood back up. I don't know what
this is
about.
Oh, it's sad?
And it's going to be sad to you, and I don't know if you heard about it.
What?
Okay.
Oh my gosh, what does this mean?
Recently, in the last week? A beached whale was dead.
It
was
found on the beach.
Like, I don't know if you heard about this. So Basically, it was in the Philippines, and it was a pregnant female that they found, and it was like
the, what kind of whale?
It's a beaked whale. Cuvier's beaked whale.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Interesting whale, very interesting. Not my favorite, so don't worry. Okay. Keep going. Wait.
So it actually wasn't a pregnant female. It was a male that had 40 kilograms of plastic in its stomach.
Oh, I did hear about this.
Isn't that so disturbing? Yeah. So basically, 40 kilograms. That's like half of my body, if not more.
Wait, in the form of...
So basically, like, there's a quote here I wrote down. It says, as we started to pull it out, the first one was a grocery bag, and then it was literally just bag after bag after bag.
Oh, my God.
And they said that it had calcified into, like, what would be a hard sphere the size of two basketballs.
Is that what made it become beached?
Yeah, so basically, they was like, it would have starved to death because it would have been... They were saying that, like, the plastic is so much more plentiful, so it would have been eating plastic, starving to death. But not actually getting any nutrients, but being so full and uncomfortable, and that the stomach acid would have been working. This is really gruesome.
This is so awful. And for anyone, it's a podcast space, but I'm holding my left hand over my chest. Just picture a gay guy
gasping. When I was reading about this, I actually was like, humans are so messed up. And sadly, this is the kind of thing, like, I obviously use plastic all the time, sometimes without thinking about it at all. And these are the kind of things that stop you in your tracks. And you're like, wait, why? Why am I using so much plastic without even thinking about it?
Rachel, who we work with, who is a plastic expert, once said this to me, which I think is so interesting. Plastic was early 1900s. It was invented. It's genius. It's a brilliant...
In terms of, like, material.
Yeah, a polymer. It's a polymer. It's a scientific, like, beautiful material. But what humans have done is used it in so many excessive ways. Mm-hmm. We haven't used it as the beautiful sort of rare thing that it should be. We've just used it to make convenience all left, right, and center. And therefore, the reason it's beautiful is it doesn't break down. It is durable. All these things. But that, I thought, was an interesting way to think of it. It's like, we have messed
this
up.
Right, it is amazing. It's okay to acknowledge that an amazing invention has been used poorly in the long run. The last gruesome detail I'll say is that they had said that, like, the stomach acid would have to work so strong to break down the plastic that it would have caused the stomach lining to weaken,
like
which
ulcers.
Meant, like, the simple things like squids and stuff that it would normally eat were, like, puncturing its stomach and just would have led to internal bleeding.
Oh, my God. That's so awful.
So.
Okay.
It was very, very gruesome when I read the whole article, but it makes you realize, like, if that's just one whale, like, think of... I don't know. And there's literally, like, an island of plastic called the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, which is three times the size of France.
Yeah, no, okay, so this is true. So I just finished an article about the young guy trying to go clean that up with machinery. That's true. That is very true. What you've just said about this beached whale is true. And talking about the vaccine episode last time, sometimes what we even came to the conclusion of is talking about the sadness of kids who now have measles is sometimes what people need to hear in order to, like, take action.
To remind you, yeah. And it's, like, not that it's a good thing, but hopefully this will be the more and more wake-up call that people actually need to go.
And so that machine that meant to go clean up this plastic island the size of France actually broke down. It didn't work. So a lot of scientists who are more into the concept of actually, like, us as humans having to
like
decrease...
preventative.
Yeah, preventative measures, which are not nearly as sexy, not nearly as fun, but that is... gonna be the main thing in our lives that we need to think about. So I'm glad you brought that up, even though that's obviously so sad.
It's harsh, yeah, but...
So what did we learn this week? No one died, but someone got hurt. And it's a human. A human got hurt. That's fun.
Oh.
So on March 9th, this is about a zoo. On March 9th, a woman climbed over the barrier of an Arizona zoo to take a selfie with a jaguar.
Oh, my God.
And was attacked. Hashtag, like, Sunday fun day.
So is March 9th a Sunday?
No, it's a Saturday. Hashtag Saturday flatterer. So hashtag Saturday is a flattering day.
Flatterday? What happened to her? Tell me.
Oh, my God. There was a photo of it. It was, like, kind of gruesome, but it wasn't that bad.
Okay, tell me before.
So she was attacked by this jaguar, and she actually apologized for making the mistake of going over the boundary because she didn't want the whole, like, Harambe thing to happen again and for, like, the jaguar to be, like punished or, like,
put
killed
to death.
So that did not happen, but it led me to read more into it. And since 2011 to 2017, 259 people have died attempting a selfie.
In zoos?
No, not in zoos. Sorry. I was changing the subject.
In
zoos.
I was rubbing my face and I'm like, how are people so stupid? And how are they all getting over the barriers? This is a problem if that many people die.
259 people die of selfies in zoos. No, sorry. This is in general. Okay. Actually, in general, it is being near cliffs and slipping.
Right, trying to... Okay.
And the Catskill Mountains in New York, which apparently are famous. I never heard of them. Googled them. Look beautiful. The last four deaths that have occurred there have been from someone either posing for or taking a photo
that
for
really
social media.
That really scares me so much.
So it was really interesting because the study that I read, like the discussion at the end was like, in like very academic terms, it was like, taking selfies aren't dangerous, but the human act around them can kill you. And I was like, okay, wow. Like someone spent
I love
like,
the voice you gave it as well.
But you know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, I know. It's like as if like taking a selfie could kill you.
Right.
Like the way like they're like scientific.
That any sometimes episode title.
Yeah, I guess so. But it's I don't know. I was sort of like
no, a little
I
wish, rolling
like,
your
yeah,
eyes.
Like,
a little
is there
bit,
a
yeah.
young like person who this is their thesis and the person's reading it like, okay, I guess it followed the scientific method. Good job.
Story time.
Story time.
Story time.
Story time.
Mitchell Moffat, do you remember as a young, little, closeted queer boy frolicking... Sorry for bringing that up. That's like honestly
traumatizing.
The most traumatizing times of our lives. Frolicking through a zoo. Do you have strong zoo memories?
I don't know that I have like very strong zoo memories. I have flashes and images of being a little queer boy running around and being like, where are the unicorns?
Wait, really?
I don't know why. But then my only real actual memories of being like a high school kid that got taken to the zoo when I was younger. Or like, I have very vivid memories of like the science center and those parts where you sometimes, it feels like similar to a zoo when you're there and
what?
You're like,
the science center is not.
I know it's not a zoo.
There's the rainforest
and
section.
There's like the bat cave. I know it's not real, but you just feel like you're in with nature.
Okay. So wait,
I grew up in a small town, okay? We had actual nature.
Is this getting to you being like, I never went to a zoo. I was
no,
deprived.
No, I did go to a zoo, but I honestly remember being bored.
Wow.
I remember being like, this is not that
Did you not
fun.
Go through your zoologist phase? As all, like, I fully went through that. I was like, I'm going to be a zoologist.
Well, I mean, like, I went to university for animal biology, and then I went to Australia and studied marine biology while I was there.
But you were bored at zoos?
Yeah, I think I liked the idea of it being in the wild. And something about, like, there were certain displays I remember, like, thinking it was cool when they were really large animals. But so many times you're just like... Do something.
Okay, there is nothing worse than getting to a zoo and being so excited about the otters, and you get there, and they're, like, under the log. You know what I mean?
You're trying to, like, see underneath.
And then you stand there for 20 minutes, and you're like, yeah, mom, dad, like, the movies guarantee entertainment. Like, this is, like, I used to literally get pits in my stomach and be like, and then someone would walk by and be like, oh, my God, the tigers just jumped from, oh, my God, it was astonishing to see them jump from stump to stump. And then you got there, and you're like, they're just sleeping.
Right.
Like, we missed the stump to stump jump.
I do remember. Once, like, I feel like at the Toronto Zoo, do the peacocks just wander?
Yeah, they have public
ones. Is that allowed? Yeah. Okay, it wasn't I was like, I think everyone I was with was like, hey, I escaped! Like, run! And we were all like scared that the peacocks had broken out.
Yeah, there's some animals that they'll be more petting zoo-ish. But I think they say don't touch them. But they're
I don't
right.
think that anyone was touching the peacock, but it felt like it wasn't supposed to be where it was.
I'm obsessed with peacocks. They're how the men are so gay and they're so showy. I love that.
I have a bit of a memory now that, like, I went to Marineland.
Oh,
and
you
know the song?
Sinner.
Everyone loves Marineland. My cousin was one of the kids' voices. It was, like, her choir that sang that.
Okay, so I'm literally obsessed with how much I'm about to roast you, okay? So
I'm a child. It wasn't my choice at this point.
Well, I was a child at this point, too. This is actually horrifying. It's a horrible memory that I'm remembering. That's so embarrassing because I barely can, like, if people put attention towards me at a party, I turn bright red. I can't believe I did this as a kid. So my Instagram handle is whalewatchmeplz because I love whales. I've loved whales for as long as I can remember, like, having a consciousness. And so because I loved whales, I was obsessed with, like, radically protesting Marineland as a concept because I was just like, as a kid, was like,
free the whales.
This is so awful. And I wrote a song like, everybody hates Marineland. And I like broke down why Marineland was problematic, like how like we need to like shut down the institution of like Niagara Falls as a I was so mad. And then once my parents had like a like potluck dinner type thing, and I remember singing this song for people
like
to
your
like
neighbors and
like
stuff.
I was like, everybody hates Marineland, like if you go there with your kids, don't even think about enjoying it, like, and that I like performed it as like an act of resistance.
That's amazing. I'm so sad that like my family was a family that was like would film everything, and I feel like if I was you, there would be a film of that.
but I'm sad that
your parents like didn't like there's not a
no,
film
but,
somewhere
but
of
if,
that
if
which
my,
would be so fun to like show
oh
right
my
now
God,
or listen
I see what
to
you mean. I, if like, my parents opened up a camera, though, I would have probably had that moment where I'm like, what are you doing? And I would have stopped singing. I would have been like, turn it off, and like ran away.
We were the opposite. We're like, where's the camera? We can't, nothing we say matters until the camera's
yeah,
on.
Sometimes I watch your like old, like when you're younger, like film things, and I'm like, they're performing.
Like, I'm like, we're just like acting normal, and then we see the camera, and then we're like, oh my God, I'm having so much fun. Yeah. Oh man, yeah, okay, Marineland, I think.
I can't believe you went there.
Have they shut down?
I think
there's been a lot of protests around.
I certainly hope so. It's awful. Marineland is awful. And I'm just like really sad for you that you ever went there.
When I was a kid, Marineland was a 30-minute drive from my house. If Jingle would play all the time on the radio and TV ads. And back then, not everyone, of course, certainly not Greg, but a lot of people loved Marineland. But opinions on keeping whales in captivity have shifted a lot since then. Most of us now know whales are freaking brilliant, and keeping them in a big concrete bathtub for our pleasure is not the cutest look. And this view gained more traction through movies like Free Willy and the documentary Blackfish.
I know you can jump this wall! Come on, I believe in you, Willie!
So now, close to six decades old, where does Marineland stand today? Between the months of May and October, for $50, you can still visit 55 cetaceans in captivity. Cetaceans is a sexy word for the infra order that classifies whales, dolphins, and porpoises. At Marineland, you can also find sea lions, walruses, and a bunch of land animals, including bears, bisons, and deer. In terms of whales, they have several belugas, and now only one orca, or killer whale, named Kiska. Kiska was captured in Iceland when she was 3 years old in 1979. Now, at 42, she has watched all five of her calves die at a young age and lives alone and isolated. This brings up an interesting turn of events in Marineland's future. As of October 2018, the Canadian Senate has passed Bill S-203 that makes captivity and breeding of cetaceans a criminal offense with fines of $200,000. The bill still needs to make its way to the House of Commons, but even if it does pass, Marineland would still be allowed to keep the 55 whales and dolphins they have, but they wouldn't be allowed to breed them or restock them, meaning, eventually, Marineland would be no more. Marineland has, unsurprisingly, come out in strong opposition of this bill, claiming it is anti-science and impairs legitimate scientific and research programs. Okay, cool, but how much is this science contributing to what we know about whales? A peer-reviewed study investigating how often studies are conducted at Marineland found 6 articles published in the past 10 years, and half of these were never cited by another author. The researchers also found that at Marineland, they often displayed inaccurate information, including that there are 77 species of whales, hello, there are 89, and that killer whales live up to 50 years, when we now know that they can live up to 90.
That is some bullshit!
Marineland is not an accredited member of the Canada Zoos and Aquariums, and on top of that, they've been charged several times with counts of animal cruelty. But to be fair to them, when inspected, the charges have been dropped. And there have been no issues of concern, according to the OSPCA, the Ontario Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. So, yes, you can still go to Marineland. You will be met most days by a line of protesters and, maybe, a feeling of guilt in your stomach. But as of right now, but hopefully not forever, Marineland is open for business.
Another thing I've done that has, it wasn't, like, technically it's not a zoo, but when out of, in my first year of university, I went to Thailand as, like, a...
Whoa, world traveler.
It was an international, like, student volunteer group. I think you ended up copying me a few years later and went with the same group to Guatemala or something.
To Ecuador, yeah.
Anyway, so when we were there, the first 2 weeks are volunteer, the second 2 weeks are travel, but we stayed at this elephant nature reserve there, which
that's
was
a popular thing to do in
yeah,
Thailand.
Yeah, I think that place is in Chiang Mai or just outside of
and
Chiang Mai.
And it's not problematic, right?
As far as I believe and know, like, their whole mission was, like, don't ride elephants. All of the elephants that were living there had come from, like, abusive backgrounds. Some of them had, like, lost limbs from, like, mines and stuff like that. And so it was, like, meant at the time, we were definitely told this is a really positive type of tourism because, like, we're not actively engaging. They're not in cages. They roam. They have so much space. And as tourists like us, we were staying there for a week to just help take care
of. What, like, wash them?
Literally
feed
pick
them.
Up elephant poo and, like, literally clean the stables and that kind of thing.
I love how you traveled across the world to like clean up after an elephant. Like, the elephant's like, joke's on you, bud.
Yeah, but it was an amazing experience, except, like, being... Okay, and at this stage, you were also so scared of spiders. Thailand had some of the craziest spiders I have ever encountered in my whole life. And we would sleep, like, my friend Vicky and I went together, and we would sleep in, like, a hut, basically, that was, like, you know, made of, like, a straw roof or whatever, just, like, a simple mattress. And for some reason in ours, there was, like, a mattress, like, leaning against the wall beside me. And the first night I went in, it was just, like, two massive spiders just on that thing. And you know when you're just, like, what? They're tarantulas. Like, they're full tarantulas.
Oh, my God.
And they're in my room, like, a foot beside my bed. I don't know what to do. And basically, there's at this property, there's, like, 20 dogs that are kind of, like, not stray dogs, but they, like, live on the property. One runs in the room, and the spiders just bolt under my bed.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, ah! And then, so, literally, I'm like, I can't sleep here. I'm terrified.
The worst part about spiders is seeing them move.
The move.
How fast they
can move. In any direction.
Yeah.
You never know what direction a spider is going to go
in.
So, eventually, I gained the confidence to, like, jump in my bed and tuck my thing in. That very same night, my roommate, Vicky, wakes up yelling. And what had happened to her, not the spider, some kind of beetle cockroach had nestled behind her ear.
Oh, I've heard about this happening.
And she didn't know what was happening. And she woke up feeling it, like, pushing into her ear. And she started screaming and went into the bathroom. And then she said she just, like, saw it run off of her body. And in that same, I don't know if this was the same night, but, like, the beds are not that big. So my net that I so perfectly tucked in had been kicked open in the middle of the night.
By you.
You
made it sound like someone else did that.
Yeah, by the spiders.
Yeah.
But then the whole night I was like, the spiders are in here. I was like using a flashlight and like looking everywhere. Like, and then I couldn't sleep because I was like, my stupid feet are moving and I'm opening it up. So beautiful experience at the Elephant Nature Park, but also horrifying.
Okay, I
thought you had to say, I have gout.
Yeah. So I do have gout. Thanks for bringing that up. That's a whole separate podcast. We should call it gout. So I used to be so afraid of tarantulas that I used to keep a photo of a wolf spider underneath the desk in my room where I would do my homework. And whenever I would get tired or lethargic from my math homework, I would pull the photo of the wolf spider out.
I remember.
Freak
you
myself
doing
out
this.
To give myself adrenaline. I'd be like, and then put it back under. And then I'd be like, okay, I'm awake. And then I would keep working
like,
on my homework.
That was like your Red Bull.
It was literally my Red Bull. Okay, so this is how I got over spiders. And it's an insane story, too, that involves I was in Guatemala at this point, staying in a hostel with a bunch of people I didn't know from around the world. So I wake up in the middle of the night and. This I say American because in my head I was like, oh, typical American. He's projectile vomiting all over the hostel room. He's literally, like, I've never seen, like, the vomit was everywhere. So he must have gotten sick from something he ate.
He must have gotten sick.
Like, or he was, like, the reaction was so weird. I remember thinking he, like, stood there and I'm like, clean it up. Like, he was so, didn't act like anything had happened. But everyone was freaking out. So they turn the lights on. And I'm sleeping on my stomach, on my front, and the lights are on, and I lift my body up, and I pull open the covers, and a tarantula crawls out of where my chest had best.
Oh,
I had been spooning a tarantula. So it had been in where my chest was, and it walks calmly off the side of my bed, but because everyone there was freaking out about the vomit, I couldn't be like,
There's a tarantula.
Like, that, I'm being traumatized.
I literally, because I was the way I am, I was like quietly just like looked around and was like, wow, he vomited. And then they turned, like, they cleaned up, turned the lights off. I like put the covers over and was kind of like, oh my God, that tarantula is either on the girl sleeping below me or it's like somewhere. And I just dealt with it. And since then, I'm not kidding, it's that whole scientific theory about fear. I have been so much less scared of spiders. But I spooned one. I spooned a spider. I spooned a tarantula. It may sound a little bit like fake news that an alarming experience with a tarantula could potentially cure me of my fear of spiders. But as it turns out, scientifically, exposure therapy is the most effective and successful method for helping people overcome their fears. Studies show that after going through exposure therapy, 90% of people had considerable reduction in their fears and anxieties 4 years later, and 65% of people after exposure therapy no longer experienced their phobia at all. Exposure therapy is so effective because it takes advantage of how the fear center of our brain processes information. The fear center of our brain is the amygdala. That is spelled amygdala. So your amygdala can be conditioned to associate anything with danger. That's why you get these fears, sometimes irrational. But since it can be conditioned, it can also be deconditioned, and it can dissociate these things away from danger as well. And this is what exposure therapy does. Relying on the psychological principle of Pavlovian extinction, the therapy works to safely expose the patient to the source of their anxieties in a gradual and consistent manner over time. It often involves somewhat of a training program where the patient creates a fear hierarchy and then works their way from the bottom of the list, aka the least scary things to do with their fear, to the top of the list where the most scary things are. So again, you start with the least scary things and slowly, gradually over time, expose yourself to the most scary things. But that isn't what happened to me. I essentially went through a type of exposure therapy known as flooding therapy, where a patient is initially exposed to the most feared item on their hierarchy instead of the least. This is definitely what happened when I spooned a tarantula. Being scared of spiders, that's not how I would suggest that you start, because it was quite traumatizing at the time, and that's what you're trying to do. Going through the hierarchy is trying to avoid trauma. But looking back on the experience, I actually remember having an affinity for the tarantula that I slept with. I kind of remember it being super cute, and that flooding therapy, that initial really scary fear of, again, spooning a tarantula, helped me to get over my fear of spiders. Podcast listeners, we love you. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you have subscribed wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you've liked and you've commented on them so we can read them and learn what you're thinking. And of course, as always, share with a friend, share with a family, share with a foe. And we will get back after this.
Okay, so we have a very special guest here today. I want to introduce you guys to Ryan, the zookeeper. Hi, Ryan. How are you doing?
How are you?
I'm good. Just so everyone knows, tell us your full name, who you are, how do we know each other, and what you do.
Okay. my name is Ryan Hegarty. I am a zookeeper at the Toronto Zoo. I've actually been working there for quite some time, almost 13 years.
Oh my God, I did not know that.
Yeah, a long time.
I was like, I'm going to ask that question, and then what if he's like 6 months? I mean, I guess I've known you more than six months. But I was like, are people going to be, okay, 13 years.
13 years, that's when I started as a...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Summer employee.
Okay.
But coming up, it'll be almost 7 years where I've been a full-time employee.
Okay,
so
amazing.
It's still been a while, yeah.
And so how do we know each other, right?
And we met through dodgeball.
Yes, we
competitive
met through
dodgeball.
Gay dodgeball yeah. league, which was very, very fun, but I am no longer in it because
left.
Yes, I have since
a little heartbroken.
Realized that my arm can't take the stress of the dodgeball.
You know what? No. It's a tough sport.
It really is. It's actually a lot more athletic than I thought.
It is.
But we're here to talk about zoos.
Right.
And
not dodgeball.
I'm obsessed with Ryan's Instagram because I sometimes get little glimpses into the animals he takes care of. And so my first question is, how did you become a zookeeper? Is there a one-way path in terms of what you got to do for school, or how did it all begin for you? And then what's the typical path?
So there's actually a ton of different ways that people that I work with have become a zookeeper. My story is I actually became a co-op student at the zoo through high school.
Okay.
So someone in my sister's year, my sister's older than me, was a co-op student at the zoo. When I found that out, I'm like, I have to do this. So I looked into the co-op program and I did my research and I got an interview with the zoo and they picked me.
Okay.
So that's kind of how I got
You got your foot in the door kind
of
thing?
Yeah, that was where I got my foot in the door and I got to know the staff there. And then when it came time where I was old enough to apply for a summer position, I did that. And because I already knew everyone and I had proven to be a really hard worker, I was again selected as a seasonal employee. And then I've basically been there ever since.
Okay.
It was summer work for it was about 6 years. And then I had finished my post-secondary school, I actually went to school for veterinary technician.
Okay, all right. I started in that and then left that.
You did?
Well, I mean, I started in animal biology with hopes to become a vet.
Oh,
and then
okay.
I was like, this is too hard.
Yeah, that's why I went the vet tech route rather than the vet route.
So vet tech is more working with the animals?
Vet tech is like a nurse in the animal world.
Right, okay.
So you're doing a lot of hands-on stuff. I went to school. I went to Seneca College in King City for that. And I did work as a vet tech for a while, but it just didn't feel right for me. I'd already been involved with the zoo, and I was very passionate about that. And I liked working with those types of animals. And there was a lot of public engagement, teaching people about mm-hmm. these animals. So I really enjoyed that aspect. So that's why I kind of left the vet tech industry and focus my attention on the zoo industry. And I just, continued my path there and eventually got on full time.
Okay.
Yeah, but
So I'm curious about once you're in and working at the zoo for anyone, not just in your experience, is there a zookeeper hierarchy? Is there animals that everyone's I want to watch or take care of that animal? Or is it set up in such a way where you're when you watch the lions, you're technically my superior? You know what I mean?
No.
Is there any sort of, or is it kind of just
Yeah, no, it doesn't work like that at all. So the Toronto Zoo is divided up regions of the world. So we're Zoo Geographic.
Okay.
And we have
Zoo Geographic.
Yeah, that's the proper term. So we have a set of keepers for each area. So within that area, there will be different routines based on the animals and how many staffing you have. And then it's seniority. We do have seniority. So obviously starting out as a new keeper, you don't work with the dangerous animals. You have some experience before you can, you're allowed to do that. So that's kind of really the only difference. And then at a certain number of years, you basically become a senior keeper. So it's just you're more experienced. But there's really no, we're all one team.
Right.
We all work together.
Okay. So if someone needs to lean into you for something that, you're available to help in any way you can, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So are there specific animals that you look after, or do you just kind of broadly look after?
So how I was mentioning, the our zoos divided up regions of the world. So I'm part of the team for the Indo-Malaya section, which is mostly or all of our Southeast Asian animals.
Okay.
So in my care, I look after greater one-horned rhinos, Sumatran tigers, Sumatran orangutans, clouded leopards.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
Lots of fish, birds, reptiles, so quite a variety of animals.
Okay.
So any given day, I could be looking after any one of those animals. I am trained to take care of them all. And then, yeah, so
does it just depend on their needs that day? Like who needs what?
It depends on like our staffing levels that day. Who kind of wants to do what, if someone's got a project they want to work on with a specific animal.
Right.
So we all discuss that in the morning and kind of then branch off and go look after those individual animals. And then we kind of get back together around lunchtime and discuss more. And
Of those animals, because some of those animals are like, you said like tiger, right?
Yep.
Is that, are there certain ones that you have to interact with like very differently? That, like in terms of safety, like you said, as a senior, you're allowed to look after some of the more dangerous animals. How? What is the difference between, and what's like the safest animal you look after that you can just like be touching and the ones that you're like, okay, I have to be a little more aware here.
So yeah, we have, like we go through training to look after all these animals and we at our, at the Toronto Zoo, we have something called protective contact, which most zoos do. And that basically means, so any dangerous animal, we have protective contact. So that means there's a barrier between us and them.
Right.
So we're never, you know, directly
like sitting beside this
Yeah,
tiger.
We're never directly in with those animals,
okay.
Just for our safety and potentially their safety as well. But we still can interact with those animals through the, any sort of, through their fencing, but it's all done in a safe manner. So, for example, like I tend to take care of the greater one-horned rhinos often, and I can touch them through the bars, but I'm never directly going in with them.
Okay.
Just because of their sheer size, they're massive
absolutely.
Animals.
Like they could accidentally
they
just
could
like
accidentally
roll over you.
Yeah, and crush me. But they're super sweet,
yeah.
And I don't think that would ever happen. But for, again, for my safety, I'm never going directly in with them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Here's something one of our employees here was like really curious about. So we're going to get into like a little bit more serious questions.
Okay.
But for you, when you're like at the end of the day, when you're done with your animals, do you ever feel sad when you like have to leave them and you know they're at the zoo, or is it like a positive experience for you when you like when you close the gate? I know you're not always necessarily like opening the gate
to be
with them, but what's that feeling like for you as a zookeeper?
So my job and like a is to basically give them the best life possible. That is why I do my job. So I in my day I am always trying the best for those animals. So I try and leave every day knowing that I've worked my hardest to give them their best day possible and to set them up for the evening so that they are having their best night possible.
Right. Positive experience.
Yeah, but I do, that's, and you know, zookeeping is a job of passion. I don't even really consider it a job. It's a kind of like a lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, we all work so hard. We're all so passionate about these animals. So that is our, every minute of our day, we're thinking about
like how to make their experience
as
positive as possible.
We want to, you know, mentally stimulate them, physically stimulate them, make sure they're the happiest. And yeah, we, so we work really hard at that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that brings me into like some other questions that come up for people in especially the roles of zoos. Cause I think there's kind of like different perspectives and that's like why I wanted to talk to you cause you're on the inside.
Yep.
And so obviously many people enjoy zoos as like entertainment.
Yep.
But then some people see it as like, are these animals like locked in cages or what is that? What's your perspective on that? Cause obviously zoos have a much bigger role than just entertainment.
Right.
You're doing, there's research going on at the zoos.
Yeah.
Or I'll let you talk about what you
feel. So obviously when zoos first started, they were basically solely entertainment. And this was hundreds of years ago. But that has evolved so much. And now our main focus is conservation, education, and research. So, you know, there's, yes, people are still coming to see animals, but we're trying to engage them in a different way. So for me in particular, my job We do a lot of public interaction. We do keeper talks. We do behind-the-scenes tours.
I didn't know that. So you, like, part of your job is also interacting with the
guests.
Yeah,
absolutely. Oh, that's, like, actually a fairly large part of our job. Okay. In my section, we, in the summers, we have the Greater One Horn Rhino keeper talk. Mm-hmm. So I do that.
Oh,
almost
fun.
Every day.
Oh, my God, that's so cute.
And then all season, we have our orangutan talk. So that's our opportunity where we get a chance to engage with the public. And my kind of feeling and takeaway from it is if I can inspire one person and to fall in love with these animals and want to make a difference, then I've done my job. Mm-hmm. So we're all very passionate about our talks because that is for sure
like
one moment in our day
to...
where we will get to talk to someone. But, you know, we're constantly going through public spaces at the zoo, like the visitor areas.
Yeah.
So when we can, we're also, you know, trying to educate people and, again, have them fall in love with these animals and make them want to make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Because as a kid especially, like being able to just be exposed to animals.
Yeah.
Is an amazing thing that can make you understand and care for them. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like having somebody like you get to show them, like, especially now, like the impact of our environmental changes
right.
and the impact of the way humans act can affect these animals. I think as a kid, it's just like can be inspiring to learn about an animal.
Yeah.
And be like, I'm going to care about that animal now.
When I was a kid and I would have assembly at school and there'd be someone that brought an animal, like that was the most exciting thing for me, seeing an animal up close. And that really is, you know, the impact of a zoo when you get to see an animal up close in person and, you know, it's showing its natural behavior. You're going to have a greater connection mm-hmm. with that animal rather than seeing it
just
on
like
TV
or
in a book.
Video,
so
yeah.
That's another really important factor with zoos is most people are not going to get a chance to see these animals in the wild. But if they can have an impact in their own backyard mm-hmm. by seeing these animals, then again, hopefully that's going to inspire people to do something and make a change because
right.
that's what we need to do.
Absolutely. You know? So in terms of like research and what else goes on behind the scenes at zoos? Like
there's,
you mentioned conservation
yeah, there's
as
a
well.
Ton of stuff that goes on behind the scenes at zoos. And I think, we're starting to get better at showcasing that because there is so much great work that does happen behind the scenes. So there's a lot of different research that goes on. We do a lot of different nutrition studies, reproductive studies. So as a keeper, I'm not super involved with some of that stuff,
mm-hmm.
but we will, for if it's a reproductive study, we'll collect urine samples or fecal samples and pass that on to those that staff, and they do the studies on it. Or we make notes on animal behavior and pass it on to the appropriate people.
And does that just depend on what studies people are doing themselves? Like
yeah,
what research that people are curious about misbehavior?
Yeah. Other departments, they have their projects that they're working on, so
okay.
they need information to be gathered.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, we do a lot of conservation work as well. So, again, we have people that are solely focused on the different conservation projects that we have going on at the zoo.
What would that mean for someone who doesn't understand, like, what is conservation in terms of, like,
how
a
zoo... So, it's basically, you know, we do different breeding and release programs. We do habitat protection programs. A lot of engaging with... local, you know, schools
mm-hmm.
and trying to have them get involved in even like in our own backyard and natural spaces. So there's a ton of different work that goes on. We have a salmon like breeding and release program where we'll actually set up baby salmon in a school and then they can, once they're at an appropriate size, they get released.
Do you mean like at a school for children?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know if this was like,
yeah.
you know how like school of fish. I was like, okay, is
yeah,
this a
yeah.
school for the salmon or a school for humans?
No,
okay, cool. So that the kids are engaged
yeah,
with
so
actually like raising.
And they're getting to help and
okay,
get involved.
Really
and then those salmon get released into the wild.
I have a question about breeding. Like this may not be a problem with salmon, but is it ever hard to like get, because I've heard that some animals, like, they'll bring them possible mates, especially when they're, like, isolated animals.
Mm-hmm.
And then they won't necessarily mate when you want them to, even though you're like, we're trying. This is an endangered
yeah.
species. We need you to mate. But they're like, no.
Yeah, it doesn't always work, you know. Just like with people, you
right,
don't always
yeah.
have the right connection.
True, true.
It's the same with animals. They don't always work. But, you know, we don't just breed free willingly. Mm-hmm. We all these
it's like specific.
Yeah,
to...
like most of the animals in our care are part of endangered species breeding programs.
Okay.
So there's a whole separate group of people that manage these breeding programs, and they make recommendations of which animals should breed based on their genetics and the current captive population, so that we can maintain a very genetically diverse
right.
population.
Not just having the same animals yeah, always being the
yeah,
the same
because
parents.
We're dealing with a small population of that species, so we have to make sure that there's no, you know, like inbreeding or you
right.
know, we're not
yep.
we don't want to
like
dim
homogenize
down.
The genetics.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So what I'm curious is about is like when an animal is born in a zoo,
yep.
but then it's for the intention to like breed back into the wild population. Mm-hmm. How does that work? Is it just literally like put into the wild or?
No. There's definitely like a whole process that we have to do in order to do that. Often if it's an animal that, you know, for sure is going to be released back into the wild, this will often happen in an off-display area where
they're not actually there
exposed to the public,
okay.
Or even have a lot of even keeper interaction because we want to keep them
Independent in that way
yeah,
from humans.
Exactly. So they don't have that association with right. humans. So for example, at the Toronto Zoo, we have a black-footed ferret breeding and release program. So black-footed ferrets had dwindled down to, I think it was 12 individual animals left.
In the world?
In the world.
Oh, my God.
So a long time ago, I don't have the exact year,
yeah.
But those animals were taken from the wild and placed in or started a breeding and release program.
Okay.
So, and I think out of those 12, only 8 were viable
okay.
to breed.
Yeah.
So the current population just came from those 8. But that's why it's so important to keep track of the genetics.
Right.
So they had to diversify the actual
like
genes.
Like as much as possible.
As much as they could.
Yeah.
But
that's
now
crazy.
There's about 500 back
oh
in the wild.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Because
so it was a successful program.
Yeah, because of zoos.
Right.
And not just the Toronto Zoo. There's multiple zoos that are involved with the black-footed ferret program. But now those animals are back into the wild in their natural habitat and thriving. And those animals, though, for that breeding program at our zoo, they're in an off-display area.
Right.
No public can see it. And there's very minimal contact with the keeper because we want to still keep them in a – have their natural wild instincts so mm-hmm. that when they go back to the wild, they are going to thrive and do
right.
well.
Do you – you may not know the exact answer to this, but is the point of a zoo in some ways, like, does the money that I spend as a zoo guest go towards programs like that?
Absolutely. Like, yeah. we're a non-for-profit, yeah. so – you know, the money that comes into the zoo, it's used to care for the animals we have, but also to support all these different programs that we are running and trying to, you know, help their wild counterparts
mm-hmm.
and the wild spaces that we want to save for the animals in our care.
That's amazing. I think
yeah.
that's like a really important thing that is, like you said, it's behind the scenes, so people
yeah.
don't always see it. But we had been talking earlier about like social media and the
yeah.
role of just like you guys saying like expanding what you show
yeah.
to the public. But obviously there's a limit when you're breeding and you don't want human interaction.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's so important for public to see that because
yeah.
for some people's perspective, all they see is like this is what a zoo maybe originally was intended. It's
right.
just like locking an animal in a cage so you can look at it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, people have one perception. But I find that they're just not getting the full story. So, and that's why I love, you know, getting my chance to talk to the public
mm-hmm.
and, you know, explaining the importance of zoos because they only see it maybe on one side.
Right.
But there's so much amazing work that goes on. And I think zoos play a huge vital role in, especially in today's society with, you know, how much habitat is dwindling.
Yeah, and how like dissociated we are from
exactly.
so
it's,
much of
when
nature.
It's not like it definitely is happening in our backyard,
mm-hmm.
but when it's not directly, when you're not directly seeing it,
yeah.
you don't really understand.
Yeah, like
but
what's even happening.
Yeah,
yeah,
but that's kind of my job is to also teach people about what is happening and what we can do to help.
Right.
Yeah.
For the animals in the zoo, do you ever feel like, do you feel like they get depressed or sad, or do you think that for the most part they're happy in their environments? And or is it kind of like, you know, it's a catch-22 where you're doing it for good reasons, but of course there are some negatives that come along with it?
I think, you know, people often will put human emotion onto animals.
Right.
So they might
I do this with my dog all the time. I'm like, does he think I'm being lazy today? Well, he actually probably
You're feeling judged by him. So yeah, I see it happen all the time where someone's like, oh, that animal looks sad, but how do you know that?
Right. And like, in the wild, like even a dog sleeps like 17 hours a day.
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of animals, they sleep in a part of their day. A lot of animals are solitary. A lot of people think when they see an animal by themselves, they're sad.
Right.
But most animals, or quite a few animals, especially in the section I work in, they're solitary species. Mm. So they would only be hanging out
by themselves.
Alone.
Yeah. That's so true, actually. I honestly haven't really thought of it that way, where you're like, yeah, if they were in the wild, they'd just be sitting under a tree on their own or doing their own thing and resting, and then when they need food, go get food. But
yeah, exactly. And, like, a really good indication of, like, animals, you know, them doing well in a captive setting is, like, you know, they're showing natural behavior. They're breeding. There's lots of different aspects. So if they're doing all these things, then that's a good indication that they are, you know, a happy animal, you could say.
Okay, I have a couple last minute sort of like rapid fire questions.
Sure. Oh, God.
I don't, not that you have to answer fast, but I'm just going to ask quickly. Answer. Okay, I feel stupid for asking this. Like, what happens to the animals in winter? Like, obviously, we live in Canada.
Yep.
And obviously, you said it's geographical. So, are animals that are not really meant to be in snow, do they go somewhere else? Or are they like fine with the snow and they're just like, what is this?
So,
like,
you know, some animals do adapt. Okay. For example, the Sumatran tigers that I look after, they can tolerate the colder temperatures.
Yeah.
And they will actually grow a thicker coat.
Oh, really? Oh, cool. Okay.
And they have, like, heated spaces outside. So, and if it's, like, a crazy Canadian winter day where it's, we don't want to
be outside. You would also maybe, like,
we'll give them access. So every animal has an inside space.
Okay. That's more temperature regulated.
Yeah. So if it's something that, like, if it is an animal that can't tolerate the colder temperatures, they will have an inside space that they're comfortable and it's appropriate temperature. So that's why, like, you don't get to see all the animals in the winter at the zoo.
Some of them are like,
and we are open all year except for Christmas Day, which a lot of people don't know. but we do have reduced admissions in the winter just because you don't get to see as much.
Quite
but
as
we
many,
still have, like, the majority of our animals are still you're able to
on
see
display.
Because we have all those tropical buildings,
right?
Where that,
like, mimic that kind
of
environment
animals, that you can still see.
Okay, this one's sort of a dramatic question.
Oh, boy.
How do you feel about? There have been quite a few stories that have come out about people like going into cages to take selfies.
Yeah.
And this might be, you don't have to like get too deep into this, but like obviously that's silly, and we don't want to disparage people who are not with us anymore, but. How does that even happen? Like, what is the perspective of the zoo? Is it because sometimes the cages are just barriers that people jump? Like,
you know, like, so, again, for any dangerous animal, we have multiple barriers.
Right.
We have signage. It's fairly, I think it would be fairly common sense
to not
do that. But I think, again, some people just forget that these are
still
wild animals. And they do have their wild instincts. And they will react in certain ways. So that's why we're so careful.
Right. You're not always with them
at all
sometimes.
So we take those precautions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're coming into the zoo, we want you to take those precautions as well and still respect the animals and their space. We don't want people.
Yeah, like it's not, I think that is a thing that people need to realize. Like, it's not just for your pure enjoyment. Like, the zoo is so much more than just you coming to consume and take from it.
Yeah, and it's like, this is their home.
Yeah.
You know, we, like, you would never go into someone's home and
act
crazy or inappropriate.
Jump into their room and,
And we want the same in the animal's home. We want people to still respect them and just enjoy their being around them and learning from them.
Okay, and here's my last question then. Kind of based out of that, like, how can, if I go to the zoo, how can I be a good zoo guest? Like, is there a pro-social way to interact with the animals? Like, when I see a chimpanzee up against the glass, like, how can I do, like, be positive? Obviously, I'm not going to be, like, bang on the glass, but is there things or tips you can think about for someone who's going to a zoo who wants to be conscious of a good behavior?
Right.
Like, what do you think about that?
I think just, you know, like, definitely try and see as much as you can and just be respectful. So, yeah, like you said, don't bang in the glass, no screaming, things like that. Like, you have to understand that animals, you know, they don't enjoy that type of thing. Right. So if you're just calm and respectful, that's the best enjoy an animal. And that's where you're going to see them, you know, thrive in their habitats and
show actually the way that they would
yeah,
be.
Yeah, and show their natural behaviors. Another really great thing when you're at the zoo is to go to the keeper talks, because one, that's often a time where the animals will be responding to their keepers. Mm. So you'll get to see them kind of in a different way.
Yep.
And then you get a chance to talk to a keeper and get to know a little bit more about those animals and get to talk to me.
Yay!
And I can share how much I love my rhinos.
Oh, my God. So, yeah. Okay. All right. Well, okay, that's all I have to ask. So, I mean, yes, absolutely, you guys need to go see Ryan. Like, so they come to which section? It was the
Indo-Malaya section. Malaya section. So, but you'll often find me around the greater one-horned rhinos.
Okay. So you're okay with people like coming up to you and being like, I heard you on the podcast.
Come and say hi. Especially if you're there in the summer. Come to the greater one-horned rhino keeper talk.
Okay.
Which happens at 2:00 every day.
Okay. All right.
So you can come see me, ask me questions afterwards, or talk to one of my coworkers if they're doing the keeper talk. We're all, like I said, we're all very passionate about what we do. We love the animals we care for. And we want to inspire people to love these animals as well and help them.
That's beautiful. So. Is there anything else you want to promo? Like, is there like the zoo?
Yeah,
Instagram,
the zoo has an Instagram account. You can just search the Toronto Zoo.
Okay, a little behind the scenes there.
Yeah, we're posting a lot more on our social media, and you can see lots of amazing videos of the animals in our care. We have a Facebook page. Again, we'll show all the events that are going on. You can also go to our website, torontozoo.ca. And you can learn more. And if you are looking at supporting the zoo, there's different links on there. You can go and support the zoo. And,
amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for educating me and our guests today, Ryan. I'm so
thanks
happy to have you in
me.
Here.
It was and, great.
Yeah,
I loved it.
We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
Bye. Thank you guys all so much for listening to this episode. Before you go, just wanted to give another shout out to a podcast we really like and we're doing a little shout out swap with, called Canada Land. It's a podcast about news, media, and politics, and comes out twice a week and dives deep into the biggest stories in the country. You'll hear some of Canada's smartest voices explain how stories come together in a way that's clear, funny, and informative. They're really great, and they've given us a shout out too, so it would mean a lot to us if you go and check them out. You can find Canada Land wherever you get your podcasts. Otherwise, we will be here back here next week, same place, same time, same everything. So we'll see you then. Bye.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.